Yes.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting for December 18, 2012. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Also, I'd like to ask if Edie, you'd take roll call, please.
All right. Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
And let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is not here tonight and had informed of that last week. Please join me, if you would, for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This hits especially close to me, and I know a number of you, because the town is much like that of Monroe in size and in the community itself, very close knit, and many of those children were known by a larger number of the township. It's a sad day in our country. My heart goes out to the parents and family members who lost loved ones. Quite frankly, I can't imagine what is in their minds and their hearts today. Many are angry, I'm sure. Others are questioning why. And frankly, I don't know that the answer will ever be no. But at the very least, we in spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood, I guess, as one city to another, I would hope that you'll be thoughtful and prayerful for those folks as they deal with the tragedy. And for the next few moments, I'd like to ask that we just have a moment of silence out of respect and in support of him. Thank you. Would any council member care to say any words, or shall we move on?
You did it very eloquently. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, Thomas.
Well, the first item this evening is an announcement or a presentation of such, and that is we have three individuals who have accepted a reappointment to either the Planning Commission or the Board of Ethics. Those three individuals are Diane Dirksen, Wayne Rodlin for the Planning Commission, and James Donner for the Board of Ethics. I don't know if last team here. No. As I stated, these are reappointments, and
it's
so
a different
tonight,
Jim Donner.
What's that?
We have two Jim Donners here today.
Oh, that's right.
Let me clarify, if that's Jim Donner, he's not.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's right.
Heard confusion.
Yes. James Donner of Monroe. Let's see.
Yeah. Just about out the door.
Yeah. So with that, I would certainly appreciate a motion to confirm my appointments to Diane Dirksen, Wayne Rodland to the Planning Commission, and James Donner to the Board of Ed.
So move.
Second.
Yeah, Mr. Gary, Councilor Gary. Okay. All right, anything else? Any other comments? No? Yes, sir. Councilor
I just want to thank, I know they're not here, but I just have, like, to have it on record, thanking them for their service to the city. I know what a big job it is on the Planning Commission, and I assume it would be just as big on the Ethics Board. Thank you.
Definitely very well, or very much appreciated that those three are willing to serve another term. All right. Thank you for the motion. Did I say who made the motion? Did you get who made the motion?
Yeah.
Councilor Reed. I'll go ahead and take a vote then. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The next portion of the meeting is comments from citizens. This time is set aside for you to speak to the City Council on any issues affecting quasi-judicial matters subject to a public hearing. You're welcome to address the City Council on any other matter. We please ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes, and we'd also appreciate your name and address for the record. First, I have signed up this evening Nancy True Pierce.
Thank you. I was at the meeting of the parents this morning at Park Place Middle School, and I hadn't thought about this until I got here, but they made a big mention of how much safer they feel given the police response we always have and the way the police work with the schools, so thank you for that. Mostly I'm here to comment tonight because I think I added to confusion last week, and I wanted to apologize for that. When you were talking about your fee proposal, I was heckling from the audience. That I thought those fees were wrong, and I was just not in alignment. So what was on the fee schedule is the 2010 fee numbers for the school mitigation, and I thought it should have been the 2012. And I want to thank the mayor and Mr. Brazel for spending time with me, and Mr. Sachs, too, for spending time with me, helping me understand that better. Really appreciate your time and attention. That it's related to the fact that you've deferred the plan. So until you pass the plan, then we still stick with the 2010 numbers. So those 2010 numbers, given that context, I understand to be correct. So I just wanted to clear up that and let you know that I really appreciate the time, too, to talk with the city officials so that we can all keep that alignment together going forward. And that's it. Any questions for me?
No? Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next up is Anique Bennett, our distinguished director of the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Anique Bennett, 108 East Main Street, number 206. I'm just here to thank our council. Thank you all for your continued support of our Monroe Chamber of Commerce. We've had a difficult year, and I am just here to thank you for your serious consideration of our lodging tax. Requests that we presented here tonight. I want to just let you know how much we appreciate at the Chamber your serious conversations that you've had with us, the clarity, reminding us of our mission and how important the work is that we can do with these lodging tax dollars. I'm very excited to be here working for the Chamber, working with you, and I want to just pledge to you that we will do all that we can with these lodging tax dollars to further our businesses, our community, and our promotions here. And so, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. That's all that I have signed up this evening, but as always, I'd like to open up to members of the audience. If anyone would like to address council, you may do so at this time. I'd ask that you approach the podium and provide your name and address for the record. Yeah. I need to speak up, don't I?
Huh?
I need to speak up a little bit, don't I?
Yeah, I wish I wasn't paying attention to you as quickly as I should. I apologize for that. But I'm probably not the only person in the room that does that occasionally, am I? Anyway, Karen and I happened to be in the neighborhood. We thought we'd stop in and see how the city of Monroe is doing. You're the most Republican mayor and council in the county. And so we wanted to see if Republicans were capable of leading, so to speak. And so, and of the things that you've done, I think it's marvelous. You've gotten rid of the red lights, which Jerry Cornfield wrote about occasionally. But you haven't gotten rid of those. I understand it was a previous administration that left those for you. You've gotten the situation with Walmart straightened out, which I also heard, not through this group, but others, that there was a potential of a lawsuit. You got that away from you. You're solvent. You have a good, well-operated police force, and things seem to be going well. You've gotten over the Menick land deal, and you've only got Lake Tye to fight, huh? So, anyway, I commend you on the way you're doing things, and as a fellow Republican, I feel very gratified.
Just for the record, this is Mr. Jim Donner of I don't know where you live, Jim. Where do you live?
Stanwood.
Yeah. Have mercy. He mentioned the word Republican there because Mr. Donner is the Republican. What's your title?
State committee member.
And he's joined by Karen Hobson, who is the 39th District Republican Chair. Thank you for coming out tonight. I appreciate your visit. You can always come out more and say hello.
We don't have any refreshments here.
But we got some great restaurants.
There you go.
All right. Anyone else from the audience who'd like to address council at this time? All right. Seeing none, then we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that's the consent agenda. Councilmember Gamble.
Pull 2A from the bills.
All right. Gamble pulling 2A. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gehring to approve the consent agenda minus item 2A. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Give Councilmember Gamble a second here to recuse yourself, I'm sure.
Yes. Out of abundance of caution, recuse myself from voting on the bills as there is a bill from my current employer.
Okay, I'll go far. All right, we have a motion. Councilmember Gehring?
Motion to approve consent agenda item 2A.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Cutterback to approve.
Tell them he has to be a little faster.
Oh. To approve council consent agenda item 2A. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. All right, moving right along here. And the reason why our esteemed Bloomberg director is with us tonight, in addition to the fact that she likes us, we have the lodging tax fund recommendations, and Mr. Sachs.
What's coming up?
Mayor, Council, tonight we're going through the annual process of approving our lodging tax funding cycle. The Lodging Tax Advisory Committee met about a month ago, got together, reviewed the proposals. There were 12 initially. One was withdrawn from Dream, so there was 11 proposals. The committee consisted of Kelsey Hendricks from the Best Western Inn, the mayor, Eldon Bartelheimer from the Chamber of Commerce, Lynn Goss from Dream. The selections were made in your packets. There's a spreadsheet that ranked the proposals. And also funding recommendation. I did want to point out that there's one peculiarity this year that we haven't had to deal with for the last 2.5 years or so. During the past legislative session, the state opened up the RCW a little bit to allow for the lodging tax monies to be used for operational as well as limited capital expenditure. That piece of legislation sunsets at the end of June 2013. Because of that, particularly the two city grants that are involved here, the cable or the Mastercraft Pro Series and the triathlon, that are very operationally dependent, will have to be notified that after July 1st, if money is expended, they will not be able to spend any of that money on operational expenses. For instance, the triathlon, the majority of the money last year was spent on fencing and crowd control, traffic control, police overtime. Similar circumstance in the wakeboard situation. I do understand that the state legislature will be taking a look at this again this year. It is Olympia, so there's no guarantee anything's going to change. But last legislative session, there was a push to remove the sunset provision. There was some disorganization amongst the lodging community, and this year it sounds like they may be coming back with a little more streamlined approach. So we will, in all of the award letters, be notifying the recipients of that restriction. What that means is this is really now peer marketing. So when we issue grants with lodging tax money, the typically it will be to market some event or some sort of activity in the city of Monroe that will put heads in beds or create overnight hotel stays in Monroe. So that being that, you do have the spreadsheet in front of you. We did attach the different applications as created, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. One last item, I did want to let you know that there will be a fund balance of a roughly $46,000 after all the funding. If you approve everything that's on here tonight, there'll be a fund balance of about $46,000. And the group is considering doing a opportunity grant cycle, maybe springtime of this year, early summer, if some other event comes up that really fits the needs. So there's no reason to keep a fund balance of tax dollars that are supposed to be spent.
Mr. Sachs, just a note that the committee met twice. The second occasion, I had a North County mayor's meeting and was unable to attend the recommendation portion of the meeting. And so as procedure calls for, it's either the mayor or a designee. And so Councilmember Camp was the designee to sit in on the recommendation portion. And so the recommendations this evening are provided by the members that Mr. Sachs spoke of and Mr. Councilmember Camp. Any questions for Mr. Camp, Councilmember Cadaway?
Thank you.
Or Mr. Sachs?
Hey, Mr. Sachs. The Fair Days Parade, how does not, I know we didn't fund it last year from what I read. That was a switch from funding it in previous years. How does that affect, you know, the quality of the Fair Days Parade and their ability? I mean, do you know any, you might not know, but.
Well, in the past, when it was funded, that money would just be a fund transfer from the lodging tax fund over into the general fund, and it would pay for public works and police activities during the parade. The reason the committee didn't approve it last year, and I think they felt just as strongly this year, is that really nobody spends the night. They come to a parade, we get a huge influx of people into town, but then they go home. Mm-hmm. What was very interesting is having the hotelier sit on the committee and tell us, you know, that, you know, the triathlon packs his hotel for 6 days. You know, the wakeboard event packs his hotel for a week. The fair does have an impact mm-hmm. on overnight stays, but it's not
as big.
Well, it's not specifically, we can't track anybody that, other than Councilmember Camp, who had a relative come to town, come to town specifically for the parade and did stay in a hotel anecdotally. But, The Faraday's Parade was just felt that was more of a service that the city provides through the general fund.
Okay.
And we thought that the lodging tax dollars, because they're limited last year in particular, in scope, and they're very focused on a specific item, that we should allocate those funds to other projects.
Okay. But it's paid out of the general fund. It is a budget line item for next year, I would assume. We don't know that.
Don't know. Diane's not here.
Okay, yeah, she's not here. It's an important function or event in our community. I don't know how long we've been having it, but it's been many, many years. So that was my question. Thanks.
Councilor Williams.
Thank you. Jeff, there's an item on here that's got a ranking of six, yet it's not funded, and there's just things with a lower priority with R. Is that a misprint, or can you just explain that?
No, that's not a misprint. The way that the ranking worked is each proposal is scored on 34 possible points. We went through and ranked them based on points, and the Dreams coupon book came out as a desirable marketing tool for downtown or for the Main Street corridor. The problem is when we went to the funding portion of it, we didn't feel, or I should say we, but the committee didn't feel that the coupon book was going to attract anybody to stay in a hotel.
Sure.
And so while based on the score sheet, it scored number six, when the committee reviewed it based on funding, they didn't feel that there was going to be any impact on the hotel stays.
Okay. So the ranking and the funding being approved are not related?
They're related, but they're not. There's not a direct torturous link.
Not the end. Councilor Geary.
Thank you. Going to as soon as I can find it here. Move to approve committee recommendations and authorize them. Thank you. Authorize the mayor to sign contracts with all tax fund recipients.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Geary, seconded by Councilmember Fetterman, to approve committee recommendations and authorize the mayor to sign contracts with lodging tax fund recipients. Anything further? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Jeff.
Okay.
All right, next one is ordinance approving change of banking services to KeyBank. This is the first reading. City Administrator Bradley.
Thank you, Mayor. On this matter, we've historically been with Bank of America, and in the recent years, so they did away with the governmental department that allowed cities to call in and reach a person or two that were designated to help the city of Monroe with our banking affairs. Bank of America did away with that department, and now when you call, who knows where you're going to be directed. So anyway, the customer service had gone away, and that caused us some concern, so we decided we'd go out and solicit bids from other banks, and then we held interviews, and following those interviews, we felt that KeyBank was the best option for the city of Monroe. They're local, great customer service. We were very impressed with what they presented to us, and feel real strongly that that is a good move for the city to make. So, great. If you have any questions, I'm willing to field those. But the action is motion to approve first reading of ordinance approving the change of banking services to KeyBank.
Councilor Williams.
Thank you. I'd like to make the motion to approve as first reading ordinance approving of change of banking services to KeyBank.
Second. Motion is made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Gamble to approve as first reading ordinance approving change of banking services to KeyBank. Any other comments or questions? I'll have that back to you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we'll have it back to you. Screen share there. All right. We are going to, of the three executive sessions tonight, we only need one. We're going to ask that we have that just prior to the consideration of hearing examiner's recommendation for Cable Park Shoreline action. But I'm also going to ask that we move that to the very end. Have the executive session, then the consideration. just so we can move some things along here without a break right in the middle.
Sure.
So, moving on here, we have the resolution adopting the 2013 fee schedule. And that is Mr. Feinberg, I believe.
Diane, Brad, Jean, and she.
Oh, is it Diane?
Well, actually, I think the key thing here is the appeal.
Would you have any what's that?
Oh, yeah.
Because Gene did a study on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Two changes.
All right, well, then we'll. I'm sorry, I was trying to. I like the conversation. All right. The administration.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, last week we brought this forward, and there were questions on whether or not we should review other fees, such as the appeals fee. I went through and, with the help of some staff, pulled the fees resolutions from the surrounding cities. And before you this evening are the proposed changes to our fees resolution to kind of come into alignment with what everybody else is. Basically, what we ended up doing is there was an applicant fee and a non-applicant fee. We did away with that and just had one fee for each of those. So, in any rate, the discussion that or guidance we would like to hear from council is, does the proposed fees look in alignment, or would you rather have us further refine how much time we spend on each proposal or each item listed in the fees resolution?
Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. Gene, I'm good with the discussion from last week myself. I'm just looking through the red lines, and I do see a combination of the appeals. I had brought that up last week, and I appreciate that. It makes sense to have the appeal to hearings entered and whatnot to be the same price as the cost of saving the same amount, so I appreciate that change. And then I see the language change as well there on the with regard to the EISs. So with that, I'll move to adopt Resolution 2012/032, establishing fees, fines, penalties, interest, and charges for 2013.
Second. Motion was made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Williams. Councilmember Davis, you went a little quicker there. To adopt Resolution 2012-032, establishing fees, fines, penalties, interest, and charges for 2013. Any further discussion? Councilmember Tedeback.
Thank you. The fee cost for the EIS, that's going to hold me back from voting yes on this fee schedule. And the reason being is I understand from our discussion last week about sometimes not charging permit fees. But I think an EIS is a little bit different animal. It can be a bigger undertaking, especially if it's a land that's very sensitive to environmental impacts. I'm hesitant about saying that that's included. I understand the cost of the consultant is listed here. But if city staff are going to possibly make the decision whether they have any type of hours put in on that, that could be a pretty big project. It might not be, but it could be, and that could be pretty substantial. So I think I'm trying to see. I like the actual cost language better, especially if there's an actual cost of the staff time put in, and that can be documented. I think that's some, you know, for a project that big for an EIS to know the staff time that was put in on something like that is important. So as this stands, I will be voting no against the fee schedule.
City Administrator Brad.
When I researched the fees on this particular item, some cities choose to do them, some don't.
Sure.
You know, it's certainly up to council if they would like to put in place like a minimum of, you know, 4 hours work. The city would do it. If it's over that, we charge for that. Anything that council sees fit, we're willing to put into place. So if there's a proposal, just let us know.
Well, so I would be more open to something like that where there's, you know, something where if the city's doing 4 hours of work or even 10 hours, that's no charge. But if it's more than that, if it's a substantial project, I think that can divert, you know, city staff away from doing other things. And with, you know, how much we've reduced city staff, I just think we need to be aware of delegating them to a project like that for no funds back. So I would be open to it if it had something where there was a limit on how much time city staff were doing it at no charge.
We had talked about last week, Brad, that preferably the discussion would be what our policy is related to whether staff would or would not do it at all. And when that question is answered, then the fee policy would be answered. I mean, we're talking, so far this issue is related to two projects in how many years you've been doing it. So it's not something that comes up often, and at this point, the ordinance or the resolution or whatever the governing documentation is states that we may or we may not charge. So I guess where I thought we were going last week was leave as was recommended last week. Have the discussion at some point whether or not we should or should not do it at all as a staff, and then return to say whether we will charge or what we would charge based on having a little better idea of what what time it takes. The other piece of this is that this was a phased EIS, so it's not a complete EIS, and I think at this point it's pretty much understood that complete EIS is going out to a contractor, which we have already listed on there. So that's just a question to council with regards to what I thought we heard last week, and that was let's talk about the policy, and we can come back and talk about the charge. But as of last week, the charge was as recommended. That's why we brought it back. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I think I'm going to say the same thing that you said. The cost consultant plus 10% implies to me that until we do come up with a policy where it involves city staff, we will hire a consultant, or a consultant will be used until we come up with a policy. And I think that's what you said. I want to make sure I was clear.
Well, the policy that stands today, or that
may or may not.
We may or may not. Yeah. And the reason we did not. So we staff did the two EISs today, or Brad did, because they were phased EISs, which were not did not need for all of the studies that are typical and this, that, and other. So,
and that's fine, I understand. But until we come up with a policy as it stands with city employees working on this, my understanding is that we would hire a consultant once we come up with a policy on how many hours city staff can work on a particular project. Whether or not it's going to be billed, that again would be for a later time for discussion. But right now, if something were to come up tomorrow, if we required an environmental impact statement, there would be a consultant, there would be a 10% administration fee, and no staff involvement other than administrative.
That's what I see. A lot of heads nodding. Yeah.
Okay.
Would you yield for the comment on the piece? I agree with your statement about the discussion last week, but that's where I like the verbiage of actual cost, because then the discussion around the process and how we handle that, the actual cost will determine whether or not we're going to charge, right? But to put it in here is cost of consultant is very specific,
right?
That so if we decide down the line, we're going to have to amend that statement as opposed to just actual cost plus the 10%.
And that's my understanding that for now.
It's not, because if you read the document, the clean version, it says cost of consultant plus 10% administration fee. And the clean copy that I have in here.
Right, that's which is yeah, what it says.
Which is what it says right here, yeah.
Right, but what I'm saying is that
I guess
I'm not explaining my look. I thought we had agreed that it would be better to use the verbiage actual cost. plus 10% administration.
Isn't that possible?
Yeah. Well, I guess it would be the choice.
The reason we're having this discussion is because we don't know what the actual cost is, because Chapter 3.34 of the Monroe Municipal Code says we will charge people for the use of consultants. So is that what that actual cost was talking about, or was it included staff time? So since we were doing only staff time, we clarified that to say, I mean, we were only doing consultant time, we clarified that to say consultants only. So if the council would like to include staff time, I would suggest we change, not go back to actual time, but say, you know, cost of staff time and consultants or something like that, so it's clear what council intent is on what we charge people for.
Brad, even in an EIS that we would send out to a consultant, mm-hmm. there's still staff time spent in preparing certain documentation.
What we give to them, we have to review it when it comes back.
Review and stuff like that.
Stuff.
Excuse me, but isn't that just part of staff administration time? That would be part of the EIS.
The administration fee is usually considered the cost of handling, you know, the finance department writing the checks to the consultant, that kind of stuff, not the staff time done working on the EIS.
Right, and that is my understanding that the staff time working on the EIS would not be done until we come up with a policy. At this point, it would just be the cost of the consultant who's going to do the EIS, then the 10% is the staff administration fee.
Yeah. I think where I was heading there is that regardless of whether it's phased EIS or full EIS,
right.
In either case, there will be staff time in preparation, in support of that process.
Right, for the EIS or for the administration part of it. That's covered by the 10%. The actual EIS is handled by a consultant until we come up with a policy.
No. Code still says you may.
That was the last one. Yeah. We did not take out the word may.
In 20.04 of the Monroe Municipal Code, it says the community development director will decide whether or not a consultant is used to prepare an EIS.
And then doesn't that take, okay. And that was the argument I thought we were delaying until...
You're right, yeah. So you just want to, how much do you want to charge for right now is the temporary stopgap, and then we'll work on whether or not May is in there or not later.
Right.
So if someone came in tomorrow and said, I want to do some big giant project, and we decided it needs an EIS,
right.
It's still at staff's discretion whether or not it's done by a consultant.
And we cannot change that until we come up with an actual policy.
We have to stay with that until it goes through the whole code amendment process of the development regulation that goes to the Planning Commission and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so can the mayor have a directive that could go to a consultant in every case until we come up with the policy or address this policy in the future?
That would be a legal question for the council.
And the question correctly is whether you can direct through this resolution.
Well, that's what I'm trying to understand. If the issue is the cost of consultant plus 10%, and the question is, we don't want staff time being spent on an EIS unless we have a clear direction, and we're quantifying staff time, and we know how much money we're going to spend, and how much technically somebody could be billed. There's the question I see. So if that cost of consultant, if we specify that every time you have an EIS until we get this directive straightened out, that we will use a consultant for any EIS project or any EIS requirement with just staff time handling administration, don't we avoid an issue of trying to track staff time connected to the EIS? And if that is the case, since we have to go through the whole policy with the Monroe Municipal Code, can the mayor direct that that's an operating procedure until the council goes through the measure? That's my question.
I believe that you can. The mayor does have the authority to direct that, but technically the decision would be made by the CEPA responsible official.
Okay.
It's going to be that administrative staff member's prerogative and that administrative staff member's responsibility to ensure that an EIS is properly prepared under the appropriate circumstances. And regardless of who prepares it and who signs it, whether it's a consultant or a staff member, it's ultimately going to be a legal document of the responsible official. So I don't know that the mayor's direction is necessarily the appropriate.
I'm just thinking in terms of the procedure. And trying to track staff time, which seems to be the issue here that I've been hearing about.
If you wanted to make a global directive to that effect, it should be made in the city's ordinances, which I agree with Mr. Feilberg, should go through the proper planning and review process.
Actually, I'll yield for a comment.
That's why I thought we were, that's why I like the actual, and I get what you're saying, Brad, is that it's, the ambiguous part of that is that we don't have a set dollar amount like, say, Lake Stevens does, right, for a staff time, right, it's 75 to 10. But if we go to actual cost, and then we have the ordinance discussion, you know, later, correct? It's the actual cost, if it goes to a consultant, that's what they would pay. If we're not charging at that particular time, because we don't know what the staff, you know, amount is, then we would just charge that, and then once we go through the ordinance process, the actual cost would be what is for the third-party consultant plus whatever the new ordinance states, correct?
Correct. The legal concern with respect to staff time is that state law limits your ability to recoup permitting administrative expenses to the city's actual cost. The city can't overreach there and require payment of a fixed amount when, in fact, the staff time related to a particular permit may have been very minimal. So I think it's important, A, to come up with some type of a mechanism and codify it to determine how much staff time is being spent, and actually document that, and also assign a specific dollar amount to it. So this is being imposed as a cost against developers in a way that's defensible, objective, and very clear on its face, and even-handed, i.e. the same developers, applicants that are similarly situated are going to be paying the same amount of money.
So if we use the verb, everything you're saying, Zach, is telling me that if we use the verbiage actual cost, we can have that discussion
yes.
later, and that would, in my opinion, kind of...
I don't see any legal problem with adding the reference to actual cost. Again, the concern, the bigger picture concern is that you never want to overreach and charge mm-hmm. a permit applicant for more time that was being spent, more expense in the city was actually occurring. So my recommendation is to, over time, move away from a 10% fixed reference to the staff expense to more toward a graduated scale where you can actually tie a particular developer's bill to the number of staff hours spent and have a dollar figure properly allocated to that.
Let me just point of motion. There is a motion on the table that has already been made to approve as is. To make any changes at this point, we'll have to do one of two things, a friendly amendment or a motion to make the change. Again, I just want to reiterate, we're having a lot of conversation with regards to really in response to comments that were made about two projects. And of the cities that we looked at here, of the seven cities, four of them don't charge any. And so we often hear, we want to know what other cities are doing so that we can compare it. So if we were to take the majority of the seven cities that we compared, they don't charge anything. So I'm just throwing that out there because, again, we're having a lot of discussion based on two items that have happened in the last how many years that Mr. Feilberg has been the secret official. So with that said,
quick there's a light on over
here. I would agree. I guess the only thing I'm saying is I think we can accomplish everything just by that little verbiage change. But I understand what you're saying. All right. Very good. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. If my memory serves, last week when we talked about this, the words actual costs were stricken, and the only debate we had up here was taking the words if any out.
Exactly.
And there was a lot of debate on those two words. Now it seems like we're going back in time and rehashing what actual cost is. And it seems to me that if we want to relook at this as part of the municipal code, we should do that at a later date. I'm not in favor of holding up the entire document because of one small piece that we have to do through the municipal code, in my opinion. So I think the verbiage as it is here is fine. I completely agree with the comments of in the municipal code having some limit on what staff is going to spend. Because I mean, I think my concern is, and I'm sure other council members is, if we have somebody in the city spending 10 hours on one of these, I don't think anybody cares. If it's 300, we care. And so to me, that's a separate discussion when we actually look at the municipal code, not part of this document. So
consultant means still the staff, even when we take out if any, the staff still decide whether a consultant is needed or not, correct? So if you decide they are not needed and there is a phased EIS done, then staff time, and there won't be that charge to it except possibly a 10% admin fee. Okay.
Until we address the municipal code.
Exactly. Right.
And
so, and what's the timeline of addressing that? I mean, well, I'm asking that question because last week it was talked about that the unclarity of the May and the two competing was what the auditor wanted us to fix. Does this fix that? Mm-hmm. This does. And that's what worries me because it puts that right now, the cost of a consultant is at the staff's discretion. And if we do not hire a consultant, then staff time could mount up to serious hours that are not charged to the developer or the landowner. And that is my biggest concern. So again, council might have had that discussion. I expressed my opinion last week that I had an issue with this. I'm telling why I'm not going to vote for it this week. Thanks. I'm done.
And I was just going to say that as City Administrator Bradlow had mentioned last week, that there are numerous occasions where staff time is spent. For instance, public records requests. We have hundreds of hours this year in public records requests. We do not. Now, of course, that is governed by state law, but it is intrinsic. It's an expected piece of local government to provide that service. I know that's kind of extreme, however, because it's governed by state law. But we have hundreds of hours every month that staff spends on providing services to our community. And again, we've had two occasions in Brad's 20-year career. You've been here 20 years yet? 25-year career. And I don't know how long he's been, but Councilor Gamble.
Yeah, Tom, you're absolutely right. The discussion was around the words if any, and I think, you know, for me particularly, what I was looking at cost of consultant, I was looking at whether it's an internal or external consultant. And then the if any was, but if any, meaning that, well, if there wasn't any, then that, you know, that means we're using an, you know, internal consultant. So I'm fine if cost of consultant means, you know, hey, whoever we have doing the study, whether it's internal or external, at the 10%, and then we can have the discussion later. I like the flexibility of the language. That's all. I think it's important, even though we're saying, hey, we're being too intentional about a couple words, but I just don't like to put us as a council into a hole. We can have it so it meets both. So what I was hearing as we were discussing this is cost of consultant doesn't mean internal or external, as I thought. With the affinity is that it just means a third party. If it means cost of consultant could be determined that is internal or external, then I'm fine and we have the ordination or the ordinance discussion later. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree. Does it make sense?
Tell us what I'm hearing.
No, thanks. Brad and his staff do a great job. Quite frankly, they need the flexibility that they have. So I'm fine with the job they're doing. Kind of muddy the water a little bit, but look forward to it when we have the discussion in the future. So with that, I'll call for the question if there are other lights on.
All right, the question's been called for. So with that, we'll go ahead and take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Let the records show that council members Pettibeck and Gamble in opposition. Motion passes 4-2. Okay, moving on here. We have a resolution in support of Payne Field. Mr. Sachs.
So what you have in front of you tonight is an outcome of conversations that took place on December 4th at the council. Councilmember Gamble, brought up his interest in supporting commercial air traffic out of Painfield. This has been a very long, long process in Snohomish County. I think it's a great opportunity for the citizens of Monroe. Seattle Times today wrote a little blurb that indicated that the city of Mukilteo is going to hire an attorney to sue the FAA over their NEPA finding. So we're about a third of the way through the Python, I think, and there will be a lot of legal action. However, where the process is right now is the federal government has made their decision. FAA rules basically indicate that Snohomish County now will have to provide commercial runway time if somebody asks for it. Allegiant Air and Horizon seem to be indicating both that they're going to take them up on that. So Snohomish County will be going through a process of creating a terminal. How they pay for it is yet to be determined. But this resolution is just a declaration of support from the city of Monroe that we would like to get on board and support Snohomish County and the commercial opportunity. So any questions you may have, I'd be happy to answer.
Councilmember Gamble.
Thanks for pushing the limit there.
It's yours, man.
Yeah, no, I'm obviously very much in support of of this. I think it's something that we could all be excited about in the greater Snohomish County community. I've researched this quite a bit, and I feel very good about the study that the federal government has done on the impact. And actually, when you look at the impact the commercial air will have on the area, actually the amount of flights that are going to be there are less than they were in years gone by. And the airport was actually busier in days gone by. So I'm very comfortable with those components, and I'm just excited for the possibility of having commercial air travel that much closer, what it would mean to the economic development for Snohomish County, the city of Everett, who is very much in support, I just think it would be great for us to throw our support behind it as well. Do I hear a motion? I move to adopt. Motion to adopt resolution 2012-033 expressing support for scheduled commercial air service at Painfield.
I'll second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Gamble and seconded by Councilmember Davis to adopt resolution 2012-033 expressing support for scheduled commercial air service at Painfield. Councilmember Gutterback.
Thank you. Jeff, I just had one question. I have heard that the city of Mukilteo was going to file a lawsuit, and one of their main concerns were they were worried about the effect it would have on Boeing on the testing, and Boeing has, I guess, a substantial testing site there, and they were worried that, with commercial air coming in there, that would squeeze Boeing a little bit, and they were worried about Boeing leaving the area. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, and I would have to say that it's an excellent argument. I don't know how much merit there is behind the argument. Boeing has very clearly said that they don't have a dog in this fight.
Did they come out and support it?
They haven't come out and supported it or opposed it.
Okay. I was just curious, because obviously aerospace and Boeing are extremely important to this area. And, we don't want them to leave. That was my only concern with having this resolution, before maybe, we had a little bit more information of other cities joining the lawsuit as they're trying to do, and what Boeing felt about it. So,
all right, any other comments? Okay, we'll take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? As a matter of record, I'm going to read the resolution at this time. A resolution expressing support for scheduled commercial air service at Painfield. Whereas the City of Monroe is fully committed to supporting general aviation at First Airfield in Monroe and believes commercial service at Painfield would enhance the viability of general aviation in Monroe. Whereas the City of Monroe recognizes the significance of commercial aviation to Snohomish County and the region's future transportation needs and economic competitiveness.
And whereas the aerospace industry's surrounding paint field is the largest concentration of aviation manufacturing in the world and the largest single industrial job center in Snohomish County in Washington State, representing 35,000 to 40,000 jobs and $2.5 billion in wages and salaries. And whereas by 2020, the region's population is projected to increase to over 1.1 million persons, with employment expected to swell to 426,000 workers. And whereas Paintfield, as a secondary regional airport alternative to Seattle Tacoma International Airport, would benefit Monroe residents and businesses through substantial time savings and other reduced traveler and opportunity costs. And whereas other key benefits of commercial air service will include new job generation and retention, attraction to the region of high technology and knowledge-based companies, expansion of the hospitality and tourism sectors in the local economy, and increased sales and property taxes. And whereas Allegiant Air and Horizon Air have approached the county and expressed interest in offering commercial passenger flights from Paintfield to Las Vegas, Portland, Oregon, and Spokane, respectively. And whereas demand generated by employment, population, and income in the Paintfield market is and will continue to be more than sufficient to support commercial aviation service. And whereas it is our commitment as elected officials to advance economic development, job generation, and retention for the future viability of our community. And whereas commercial aviation at Paintfield will reaffirm and strengthen the region's longstanding position as the epicenter of commercial airspace in the global marketplace. And now, therefore, be it resolved by the Mayor and the Monroe City Council that, number one, the City of Monroe supports the establishment of scheduled commercial air service at Paintfield as it aligns with our community's long-term economic development goals to attract aerospace technology and other commercial light industry that brings family wage jobs to our community and to the region. Number two, the City of Monroe encourages Snohomish County and Snohomish County cities to enter into good faith negotiations to ensure that interested airlines pay their way to operate at Paintfield and those impacts created due to commercial service to surrounding communities are mitigated. Signed the City of Monroe Board. The City of Monroe, Washington, signed Robert G. Zimmerman, Mayor. All right. Very good. Thank you. Great idea. We'll get that out to Mayor Joe Marine in Mukilteo right away.
Sure, he'll appreciate it.
They're going to name Jason on their lawsuit if you did.
Okay. All right, moving right along here then. We will move on to council member reports. Councilmember Gearing?
Nothing tonight, thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback? Councilmember Williams?
No.
Councilmember Camp, yes, you do.
I do.
Right.
Oh, I knew it was something like that. I had the opportunity to attend. What exactly was it? I keep thinking it was a trade mission.
On Friday?
On Friday.
It was a development project for First Air. They were trying to attract foreign investment to establish helicopter school, housing, hotel at First Air.
Yeah, it was an opportunity to meet investors from China.
From China, that's great.
And meet some of the people who are coordinated working with First Air. It was a very educational experience. Chance to talk to some really interesting people. I just wanted to commend the city staff, Jeff Sachs, Gene was there, and Paul, who's not here tonight, for the excellent job they did. Oh, there he is. Hi, Paul. They did an excellent job putting it together. It was very professional and reminding us repeatedly to bring business cards, except for one person, because that's a very important aspect of dealing with people from China. So I wanted to commend you guys, and thank you.
Jeff, I'll just ask in a minute as we get to staff reports, just to give a little, maybe a broader kind of scope of the meeting itself and the potential that with regards to investment here in the City of Monroe. But thanks, Councilmember Camp, for that report. And he was talking about me not bringing my cars. I came straight from court.
I know you have extensive
from the jury duty, and I did run home. Thank you. Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Gamble.
So as most of you know, because of that I was working for Frontier and now Comcast, I work in the communications industry. And there was a pretty significant event within the last week that you may or may not have heard. I thought I'd make everyone aware, but Comcast changed its logo. So I thought that was very important to let you know, because it happens about once every 3 years. So, but no, actually, it's pretty.
I'm pretty proud of this. What's that? Yeah, it's a.
You owned by NBC?
Yeah. Well, no, we own NBC. Comcast bought NBC. It's the Peacock. So you've got Comcast with the Peacock across, you know, harkening back. But we've turned around the NBC portion of the business because when we purchased it, it was not doing so well. So anyway, that is the new logo, and we are now a Fortune 50 company, and things are going smoothly.
Do you get a new shirt?
I'm going to have to get a new shirt. Actually, this is the Xfinity brand shirt, so it is a product line of podcasts, so this is still good. But I will get new shirts just for you.
I think there's only probably, I'm going to count maybe four people in this room that remember that Peacock coming from black and white to color. You don't remember?
No, I don't remember.
Councilor Williams?
When Mr. Sachs gives an update or somebody, could we also get an update on the brick plant? There was talk a while ago about an ice rink, and so we haven't heard anything. So,
definitely. All right. With that, we'll go to staff reports, and I'm going to shake it up here to start up front. Brad,
for me.
Mr. Hirano.
Oh, excuse me. I have to step in with our student representative.
Right.
If you have an opportunity, look at the next Monroe Monitor. There's a very interesting article about our new student representative and his plans for the future. I thought I was very impressed and just wanted to make mention of it, too.
You just like having your picture in the paper.
Well, no.
No, this is different.
That's Sam. That was a different?
Sam Cameron. You didn't see the other one?
No. Oh, I'll go out and look right there.
Anyway.
Chief?
No, nothing other than I would ask you to take a moment to glance at the letter from the Wilson family. I put in your company. I guess.
Thank you. Ben? Paul? Jeff?
The brick plant. It's actively being listed. The proponent of the ice skating rink, we haven't heard from in a fair amount of time. I think reality sunk in with those folks as they had about $1.5 million in capital to purchase land, and that's about half of what they need to buy a piece of land that they would need for an ice arena. So there's just a situation where they were probably undercapitalized. Still an interest, and there's still a market for that here in Monroe, but the brick plant is for sale. I've talked with the owners, and I believe they've discontinued operation there and pulled their equipment out of the building now. So there you are. With relation to what was going on at First Air last Friday, I'll forward this. I just have one paper copy of the PowerPoint presentation that was given, but we're working with a group of developers. It's a really a cool project. They're functioning under a federal program called EB-5. EB-5 is I'm not sure which federal agency controls it, whether it's Homeland Security or INS or IRS or whatever. But the essence of EB-5 is if a foreign investor is willing to bring $1 million and invest it in risk capital in a business operation in the United States that creates jobs, 10 jobs, for American workers, that foreign individual is given a visa to come into the United States. The money has to stay at risk for 5 years, and at the end of that 5-year period, that visa becomes a permanent green card for that foreign individual. So this has been used quite successfully in South Seattle. There's a small program working around Linwood for their town center. There is one in Everett, and there's a regional center for Snohomish County that's been mostly unsuccessful in attracting foreign investment. What we were able to do with the Keller Williams rep that's working to sell Dr. Havoc's First Air is they were able to bring in, I believe there were 6 Chinese investors, all of which were capable of writing a check for $1 million that day if they chose to. They came to First Air and were given a presentation on the viability of a $30.5 million development project at First Air to extend the airfield, to build a helicopter flight school, to train, believe it or not, Chinese helicopter pilots. In addition to that, provide housing for those folks two different ways, purchasing single-family residential homes in Monroe as well as building a hotel. The kind of the picture would be a 135-room Marriott hotel somewhere in Monroe, not necessarily on the First Air site. In addition to that, market the add additional hangars. They would like to double the number of home-based aircraft at First Air. And it was just a very interesting process in how it was done. We had interpreters. None of the Chinese visitors, well, whether they spoke English or not, we don't know. But it's the first time I've sat through, well, it's not the first time, but recently the first time I've sat through a business presentation with an interpreter, and the questions that went back and forth. City staff, and it was very interesting. It was a cross-cultural event. At the end of the event, we were able to send them over to Clearview Spirits and Wine. The Chinese culture tends to mix business with pleasure, and this was their last stop after a two-week-long tour where they went to San Diego, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and then up to Monroe. What was indicated is they will now go back to China. They're working with a gentleman by the name of Jesse Tam, who is the expert on ED5 for this development group. Hopefully they will. We have a tentative meeting where Jesse and his associates will be up here to educate city staff on what ED5 is, how does it work, and what's the city's position in that. That will be an educational component. The next step will be for these six investors to go back to China and discuss this with their associates and other investors. I asked one of them, what's the appetite in China for this? And the way they described it was massive. The number of newfound millionaires in China is enormous. And there are literally hundreds of thousands of folks in China that have cash in their pocket that are ready to come to America and invest it. So if the project pencils out and if enough curiosity was created, we will have another group of Chinese visitors probably within the next 3 to 6 months to take a look at the project. They'll come in groups of 20 from this point forward. And once again, they're trying to attract $30.5 million worth of risk capital. At the end of that five-year period, the business plan is to liquidate or to sell to a single individual or another consortium that would come in and purchase the helicopter school as well as the flight or First Air Field and continue the operation that way. So very interesting, and I wanted to thank Mayor Pro Tem, Councilmember Camp, and the mayor for coming. It was very interesting that the Chinese culture does appreciate and respect position, and so having our city leadership there to show that the city of Monroe is standing tall and ready to accept development, I think really assisted the developer and bred confidence in the investors that were ready to go. So I'll keep y'all posted.
I hope you caught the schedule that they had. San Diego, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and Monroe. A lot of discussion is going on within the Chinese business community that's specific to Monroe. And that's just, you know, put in perspective that we're being compared to, you know, four major cities on the West Coast. So
one thing I'd like to
add,
and this is kind of a pitch that I've been making continuously about rooftops and residential development, but a big part of their sales presentation was the development of Highway 522. And this is from a group of developers that don't live in Monroe, don't work in Monroe, don't have any business in Monroe, but how they're selling Monroe is, we're now 20 minutes from Microsoft. Once that 522 process project is complete, the commute time from Monroe into the east side is 20 minutes. And they're selling Monroe as not only a place to do business, but a place to live. And so the preparation work that and the fact that we need to be alert and aware that when that project is complete in about a year, we're going to have this transportation fire hose in and out of Monroe that's going to really attract a lot of investment. So it's a good thing.
And again, yes.
I got just one thing. Two of the big conversations that I had and heard repeatedly was access to Mac, to Microsoft Campus and access to Boeing. Those were the two primary questions I got. And as part of that 522 expansion, that stood very large in the presentation and in the questions from the investors.
All in all, the Council Member Geary?
Yeah, just was going to say the Sister City program was also brought up a number of times as well. I was asked over and over, what is Monroe all about? They, what they're thinking, what's a city in China that we could be a sister city with potentially? So I thought that was very interesting as well. A big deal.
Yeah. And there are some standards that we use in order to actually create a sister city relationship, and part of that is economic connectivity, which in this case we would have some connectivity that way, should they choose to invest the $30.5 million. All right. City Administrator Bradlow.
Thank you. Draft agenda for January 8th, 2013. We have the consent agenda. Under final action, we have resolution supporting student representative Verano's proposed painting project at Monroe High School. Under study session, we have the department reports and the draft agenda for January 15th, 2013. Any additions or deletions?
Just to give a heads up, for the second meeting in January, staff or the director's leadership and I had a meeting several weeks ago, and specifically with regards to goals for 2013. And so we'll be seeing two goals reports or goals presentations, one by Chief Quinzer and another by Mike Farrell. And I'll be asking City Council to pay close attention, and hopefully we'll gain your support in promoting the objectives that will be presented to you there. So just a little teaser. Chief Quinzer will be sharing with us, as well as Mike Farrell. So I have nothing to report other than what has been said tonight regarding Friday, and the fact that jury duty is over, and I'm pleased with that. Very, very interesting process, unlike I have seen before that I've done that, and I've been in a lawsuit or anything like that. Lots of fun. And I was elected as the jury foreman. Well, okay. Enjoy that. We do have one last item, and prior to that, we will be going into executive session. And the purpose of that executive session is pertaining to potential litigation. And City Attorney Lell, you have the RCW, and subject matter for that.
Yes, and how long will the executive session take?
15?
Yeah, 15
at the most. Pursuant to RCW 4230.110.1i, the council will now convene an executive session for the purpose of discussing potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session will last approximately 15 minutes, after which the council may take action in open session.
I'm going to change that to 10 minutes in hope, and I think we can do it. We do have an action item afterwards in that potential action item afterwards. So with that, we will go into executive session for 10 minutes. We're back in regular session.
Thank you. I move to table and postpone consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation for Cable Park Shoreline conditional use permit until the meeting on January 15, 2013.
Second. All right, motion made by Councilmember Pettibeck, seconded by Councilmember Gamble to table the consideration of hearing examiner's recommendation for Cable Park Shoreline conditional use permit until the January 15th meeting. Any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Councilmember Hearing.
I move to adjourn the meeting.
I want to say happy holidays to everybody before you adjourn.
We don't have a whole idea.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Discussion.
I want to have these, so you know. Sorry.
Right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hearing.
Discussion.
By Councilmember Camp to adjourn. Any discussion?
I would like to wish everybody a happy holidays and celebrate Christmas. Merry Christmas.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And here it is. Happy Hanukkah.